Hey, yo, what is a cipher?
It was basically people who were jealous and wanted to come by and just mess up our groove because of what we were doing.
The knowledge of the cipher is to enlighten you.
Where you think the cipher come from?
The gods.
Because you tried to jump the cipher and it goes this way.
Welcome to The Cipher, a weekly podcast bringing you talks with the most interesting figures in hip-hop and culture. I'm your host, Sean Sotero. This is episode 170, a talk with Sugar T. Sugar T is a rapper best known as a member of the influential Bay Area group, The Click. The group consists of her cousin B Legit and her brothers D-Shot and E-40. The Click has been making music together since the 1980s and released their debut album Down and Dirty in 1992. Sugar T's solo career quickly followed, with her album It's All Good in 1993. Since then, she has released music solo, with The Click, and in collaboration with E-40, appearing on such hits as Hurricane, Sprinkle Me, Captain Save-A-Ho, and more. But she has also found a second life as a singer, releasing albums of gospel, jazz, and soul music. We talked to Sugar T at the Mandarin Oriental Hotel in Midtown Manhattan on the day after she was recognized as a hip-hop pioneer at the VH1 Honors event. Unfortunately, that talk got cut a little short, so we caught up about a week later via Skype from her home in California. To make sure you hear each episode of The Cipher as soon as it drops, subscribe on iTunes. Once you do that, make sure to check out our back catalog. If you enjoy this show, for example, listen to our interview with another Bay Area rap veteran, Paris, on episode 136. Also consider helping the show by becoming a patron. Visit us at patreon.com/thecyphershow and sign up. Bringing you a show every single week takes a lot of time and effort from me and Josh, and we really need your support to continue to maintain this level of output. If even a quarter of our listeners contributed just $1 a month, it would go a long way towards making the show sustainable. As an added bonus for our patrons, we try monthly to share some bonus material that sometimes comes out when talking to our guests after the main interview is over. The bonus we'll be releasing at the beginning of November is pretty unbelievable. Coming from our upcoming show with Monica Lynch, it will include some rarely heard Wu-Tang Clan and RZA demos, some of which don't exist anywhere else but on the tapes she brought us. Become a patron by October 31st to get access. If you're curious about any of the songs we're playing during this episode, visit thecyphershow.com to find a complete list. While you're there, sign up for our monthly newsletter to stay on top of what we're up to on the air and in the wider world. And now, here's a real hurricane, Sugar T. Sugar T, thanks for coming through, agreeing to talk to us. I appreciate it.
Yes.
So I know you grew up in Kojic, Church of God in Christ.
Yes.
Can you tell me a little bit about the role music played in the church?
Absolutely. Pretty much I grew up singing in the choir. Singing in the choir, my grandparents were pastors and pastor's wife. So they would throw me in front of the choir to sing with the, in front of, I was the only one for some odd reason. You know, it's your turn to sing. Why do I have to sing? And they just throw, all my aunts would throw me in front. And all of a sudden they make me lead the songs. So it was a great experience because it made me not afraid to get in front of people and sing and perform.
Nice.
Yeah.
So when I was researching for this, I came across some stuff from The Click back before you were The Click when it was The Kingsmen.
Yeah.
Were you involved at that point?
Absolutely, yeah. At that point, I was actually called Sugar and Spice. So it was me and my best friend, who's still my best friend today, and we were a group that was pushing into the movement.
The early name for The Click was actually MVP. The Kingsmen was the name of their 1988 release, which included three songs from MVP and one from Sugar and Spice.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Kingsmen stuff I heard was very different.
Luxury in my two-story home. Sitting back talking on my telephone. Love blows on as my thoughts expand. She put a hurting on my heart. I need a helping hand. When we first became
It was trying to sound like LL.
I was giggling about the games that I had played with many hearts, and I'm not saying no names. Then the thought
kind of trying to sound like what was popular at the time. Can you talk a little bit about going from that to kind of developing your own sound?
Yeah, well, we definitely wasn't trying to sound like LL. We kind of in the Bay got our own little swag. So we were just moving more so I would give more Oakland credit, mm-hmm. Oakland, California, because Oakland area was kind of more into style and, you know, they were all the Fila and, you know, they were kind of into the movement of fashion in a different way. Mm-hmm. So that was more of our influence because we're from Vallejo, but Oakland was also somewhere that we grew up with. Like on the weekends, we'd have family there and spent a lot of time. So it was more so a combination. Mm-hmm. And of course, with the respect of the, you know, the other rappers, I wouldn't say LL. I think we liked Run DMC at that time more so because it was three of them.
Right.
But we loved LL Cool J's music also, but that would be, if we were to pick, it would be Run DMC. Don't be the papa pick peppers, you know.
Yeah.
My Adidas.
And the first Click album, Down and Dirty, there was an original version of that. And then, but the version that got reissued by Jive, how did you feel about that? Because you didn't actually make any of the tracks on that.
You did your homework, huh?
Yeah. So you're on the cover, so you would think they would
absolutely
put you on it.
You know what? That one was, that was before I got into the group. So there was recordings going on. And then I was actually on that album, too.
On the original Sick With It version.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it was changed around when we signed to Jive. There were certain clearances and things that we needed, you know. So that was a change.
Were you disappointed that none of the songs you were on ended up making the...
No, I wasn't. I think I was on the songs.
Okay.
Yeah, I was on some of the songs, I think. And if I wasn't, that's because I hadn't become a part of the Click yet.
Ah.
I don't remember. It's been so many.
Gotcha.
So many albums, so many projects. And of course, even if I wasn't, I was in the background singing or doing a hook or rapping.
Sure.
Or promoting or running the label, you know, being like a Jamaican, you know, with 10 jobs, helping, pushing the albums, pushing, calling radio stations, doing whatever I needed to do to help make it run. Driving them, you know, taking care of the money, managing them, selling something, supporting or something.
Yeah. And I know from hearing your brother's book that your uncle, St. Charles, had a big part and was sort of your first break in the business.
We had diamonds in our own backyard. But we didn't realize it at first. His name was St. Charles Thurman, our uncle, an extraordinary man who first kicked off his career in the late 70s. He would be perfect, I said to E-40, and he agreed with me. He was the perfect man.
Who was he? Like, what was his relationship to the music business before he got involved in the Click?
Yes, well, my uncle St. Charles, he had an album out himself years ago.
The sun wakes up, the sleep.
Because we all grew up with music. All of our aunts were singers, and they all, like, had choirs and bands. And my mom was a singer. My dad, he's still a singer. As a matter of fact, I performed with him sometime. But he's a blues singer. But he did jazz at that time. So it was pretty much a part of the movement of our family. And my uncle just so happened to know more of the music industry business and, you know, had a little bit more information to be able to teach us how to be the executive part of the production. Mm-hmm. So he was very influential because he believed in us, took us under the wing and started just pushing the movement.
Nice. And some of the earliest recordings were all done with a guy, Studio Tone.
Yes, Studio Tone was another producer that believed in us.
Mm-hmm.
He pulled us into the studio. Him and Felton Pilot was also, James Early and Felton Pilot. They also brought us into the studio from Confunction.
Felton Pilot is best known for his time in the R&B and funk band Confunction. He was also a producer on MC Hammer's early work, including the diamond-selling 1990 album Please Hammer, Don't Hurt Him.
Yeah, and they believed and let us use the studio. They wasn't scared of rap, although they were into singing and other things.
Yeah.
And gave us a shot, and we worked at it.
Nice. And you did a great song with your brother that I don't know if it was before your first album or after. It was the same year that You Ain't Shit. I don't even know if you remember.
It's
such a funny song because it's like one of those like male-female duets that right. was so popular at the time, like Ice Cube and Yo-Yo had and all sure. that stuff. But you're doing it with your brother.
You be talking all that shit like you bad, hoe. You ain't shit.
You tripping. You ain't shit.
Yeah, you need to check yourself. You know what I'm saying?
Shit. Niggas be always talking that crazy materialistic shit, and then get mad and wanna call you a bitch. Don't no wanna want no man that ain't got naked, so it's a woman job to get a nigga straight and when it's time.
Is that a little weird?
Yeah, cause I probably felt that way at the time. No, I'm just playing. Yeah, he liked me to talk smack. So, but I think that, did you guys hear this? Did you do FedEx? You know, FedEx was, I think, before that. It's called FedEx.
Oh, no, I haven't heard that one.
Yeah, so I wrote with him, I think, on his first one. I song. It's a time and name ringing. Major fact of FedEx. Let him know, boy. So, you know, I rode with him first before I told him he wasn't shit. Excuse my language.
Nice. I saw some footage while I was researching for this of in September 93, your brother shot a video for Practice Looking Hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you were at, and a whole bunch of people, Boots Riley from The Coup, mm-hmm. and Pac
yes.
was there. He had a pretty big cameo in the video.
We're at Golden Gate Park.
In Oakland?
Yeah. Cocoa. And what we're doing is getting some pictures of water.
Oh, no. Oh,
we got
no.
up here with some Tupac and 40 water. They're yeah. all over there. So I'm about to call Boots from what's the name? He posted on his way.
What do you remember about that shoot?
Well, what I remember about the shoot, so that was pretty unique. It was Practicing Looking Hard.
Yeah, that was such a...
That's how we learned how to look hard. Me mugging.
So your first record for It's All Good, you know, obviously Studio Tone worked on that. Did he do a lot? Who did the music for it? Who put the beats together?
Actually, Biker Season was the first song on the Kingsmen, mm-hmm. on the MVP Kingsmen. And that was Studio Tone. And then for the It's All Good, there was multiple producers. It was, of course, Studio Tone. It was, Tone Capone. Oh no, he was on the Paper Chasing one. I can't remember all of them, to be honest with you.
Credits to those days were a little,
It was just so many, you know, after you write so many songs, it's like, oh my God, you know, I broke with so many producers and just, you know, it's been so many years. How long is that? It's like 20 years, huh?
Yeah, about that.
For that particular song, maybe even 25.
Almost, yeah. It was 93 in that first record?
Yeah.
Somewhere in there? Yeah.
Yeah, I was a teenager.
Yeah.
Goodness.
Yeah.
A little bit younger than I am now.
And, you know, I wanted to ask about a particular tune on that record about Billy Badass.
Oh, wow.
You know, it's kind of the story, morality play kind
sure.
of song.
Sure. One boy named Billy Daddy thought he was cool, thought he was too damn cool to take his ass to school. But little did he know it would have paid
in the end. He had to be the class clown to keep up with his friends. And you haven't really done much stuff like that, the kind of like narrative thing.
Exactly.
Why not? Would why just that one?
That's a good question. Well, Billy Bad was I actually did quite a bit of narrative songs. Mm-hmm. Many. And you can actually Google it. If you go to my website, you mm-hmm. can see the albums that are out. So one of them I did it for a cause, matter of fact, a new one. And the new one is pretty much focused around self-motivation.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Don't X Me Out.
I need your love. Please don't X me out. Don't let me go.
Don't leave me alone.
Don't X me out.
That's one of them. And so it pretty much is just highlighting a person that's not in a good space and being left out, feeling like you're being left out pretty much. You know, when I wrote that song, I thought about, I was in that space at one point, feeling a certain way at that time. So I felt like it put me in a space where other people were in that space. Like the boy that was sitting in the classroom that never talked, you know, no one talked to him. Nobody noticed him. And one day out the blue, when he wasn't there, people were like, hey, that guy's not there anymore. What happened to him? They're like, oh, well, he went and killed himself, you know? And it's like, no one ever paid attention. They didn't listen, you know? They had no clue, you know, of what he was going through. Mm-hmm. And they made him feel like he was nobody. So next thing you know, he's gone. And now they noticed him.
Right.
So Don't X Me Out kind of put me in that space. So I share that message, what people in that space, not just the suicide space, but just the space of people who need to be recognized or who need to be loved. And also, you know, when I'm in that space, or hopefully not too often, but I could pull that out and tell them yeah. and appreciate yeah. the opportunity to be connected.
Yeah. And, you know, one of your most popular songs is the If I Took Your Boyfriend.
Now should I be a snake to fight? Wine and dine, or peep at him from the corner of my eye.
If I took your boyfriend, what would you do? Would you wanna kill me, or would you wanna feel me? If I took your boyfriend,
which of course a riff on Prince's If I Was Your Girlfriend. What gave you the idea to kind of remake his tune?
Cause I love Prince, and it was a little bit of my character at that time.
Mm-hmm.
I just felt like I was being treated mean by women. And I'm like, you know, I'm not even mean to you guys. And what if I was like this? You know, let me make a song to get everybody back and make them think about it. But, you know, again, I was in a different space.
Yeah.
And it also let me use a Prince song. So thankful that I did be able to utilize his music. And they actually cleared that for me. Prince was a blessing.
Very rare.
Yeah.
And, you moved from, you know, independent, the sort of family label, Sick With It, to Jive. And mm-hmm. you, on You Don't Want to See Me, you had a line about how people kind of started knocking you when that happened.
Shaking these busters all the time, trying to knock me because I signed the Jive. And I'm sick with it, the underground tip. Fuck with a bitch, I send your ass to the dentist. Never would go out like.
What do you remember about that? What kind of stuff were people saying and doing to give you that
you don't want to see
impression.
Me
impression? Yeah.
Oh, well, it was just, I don't know, I was just young and wild, you know, just a young kid talking smack and ready for whatever.
Nice. And one of the, you've done plenty of other stuff besides rapping, including acting.
Mm-hmm.
You did a little bit of sketch comedy on the MTV Lyricist Lounge show.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like the audience chose Kim. How are you doing there, Kim?
How you doing, Chad? I'm doing fine, as you can see. And I know it's a pleasure for you to have me on your show, because I am the bomb. Continue.
What was it like to kind of dive into that?
That was cool. Actually, that was really a situation that I didn't expect to be on the whole sitcom the whole time like that. I just was called. I knew a guy, Joe. He's from New York, and he had a magazine. He was and I had did an interview in his magazine at one point, and then he had out the blue called and said, "Hey, you know, my boys over in L.A. They're from New York, but they're in L.A. working on a show, MTV Lyricist Lounge show. They're looking for some female rappers. You should go try out."
Mm-hmm.
So I went and tried out, and Claude Brooks was the producer of the show, and some of the other guys, which was Word, and a few other of the guys that was from the East Coast that was doing that whole Cypher thing for a long time, and they ended up bringing me in on the show after one take, and I thought I was going to be on there just one time as a guest star, but they kept me through the whole season as a writer and doing voiceovers and acting on it, as well as a performer and a co-star.
Nice. And you also wrote, or, you know, co-wrote Original Gangsters, a movie.
You're looking at a factory town that somehow became a gang town. The headquarters to a gang called the Rebels.
All that money for basketball?
Stand back for the hustle unlocked.
Was your brother's?
I was definitely a co-writer of that as well, yeah.
What was it like to write for Pam Grier and Jim Brown and that kind of those kind of folks?
You know, just connected. I was actually writing for it and didn't even know it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that was before I knew I was a producer. So, yeah. And so it motivated me to be the producer that I am today, the different products that I'm able to get behind and put together and create and, you know, just have a vision for.
Mm-hmm.
It was a great start.
Great. And, you know, you're in New York right now because of last night's event, the VH1 Hip Hop Honors. What was that like?
You know, it was a blessing to be a part of it and that I didn't get left out and overlooked.
Mm-hmm.
Felt good. to see all the ladies together, see them, you know, doing their thing and being honored, not having to be pushed by a male, you know, and have to be backed by a male who we're often overshadowed from.
Sure.
It felt really good. And I'm just really thankful that Queen Latifah opened up the door for us and kept it real and remembered all of us and dug into the deep to get the ones that aren't always visible on television.
The originator, Sean Rock from the Funky 4+1+1. Represent from down south, my girl Mia X from the NOLA. Sugar T in the building. Represent the west side, my girl Rod Digger. Straight out of Philly, Miss J. The B-R-A-T. Shoutouts best.
But that still work hard and still offer, you know, the services, you know, that they deserve to be honored for.
Yeah. And finally, we're a little short on time, but hopefully we can have you back next time you're in town.
I would love to. My new album is coming out.
I was going
to
say, what are you up to? You know, your singing career and the fragrances and all this kind of stuff. Tell us a little about what you're up to.
Yes. The Sugar Rush Movement is music, media, and motivation. So the music is a multi-genre project, starting off with my new rap album. It's called Still Pushing.
Keep it pushing. A greatest hit. Keep it on push. I just look like this.
Yep.
On the case, write the check, I'm on the way.
And there's another series of other genres, which will be a blues album following it, called Young Girls Blues, alongside of it. Secondly, the motivation just comes from my motivational speaking and the book series that I'm releasing and keeping present, and the opportunities to bring information to help bring positive change and enlighten people with the messages. And as well as the fragrance, of course, that's a part of the movement. Always, that's a part of wellness and a part of the motivation in support of different causes that we can provide support and share funds with. And of course, XM Sway on the XM Radio will be playing at Sirius Radio out here. I'm definitely pushing my music. I know you'll play my music and let people know. And music, motivation, and media. So the media projects, just being seen more, making myself more visible, showing more appreciation to my fans, the people that are following me, the people that want to hear, making sure that I keep a presence. And Young Grandmothers Club is a part of that. That's a new production.
Oh, excellent. Okay, well.
TV show production.
Nice.
Right, Young Grandmothers Club. A whole bunch of grandmothers and people who are pushing, who are young, spunky, a culture that's out there that's not seen much, and keeping that present, giving everybody a sugar rush.
Excellent. Well, Sugar T, First Lady of the Bay, Godmother of Rap, thank you for coming by the Cypher.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Anybody that wants to come and get me can find me at Sugar T Official Twitter, Sugar T Official Facebook, Sugar T Official Instagram, and Sugar Space T, Oakland, California for Facebook, YouTube, and stay connected.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. It was at this point that Sugar had to run, but she wanted to make sure we caught up to finish our talk, so we connected via Skype when she got back home just about a week later. So tell me about the aftermath of the award show.
Yeah. So after the aftermath of the award show, becoming officially a West Coast female hip hop pioneer. So I guess it's like it kind of made me official to those that, you know, that may have either not knew or thought different. And in between that time, I've just been working, trying to just make sure that I have, you know, everything in place to follow up on the, you know, on the momentum pretty much.
Yeah. So you have a lot of like organizations and nonprofits and efforts like that. Can you tell me a little bit about that? You kind of mentioned it just in passing towards the end of the last conversation.
Yeah, sure. Sure. Yeah, pretty much. You know, I have a few, I'm an enterprise formatted business pretty much. One business is my services as a producer, TV, music, and event, as well as business coaching services. And then I also have a company, Sprinkle Me Fragrance and Wellness Essentials, where, you know, we're very interested in the wellness of people. It's a fragrance
company, and we started off with just the fragrance products. But because I started the fragrance company during a domestic violence relationship, I felt that it was important for me to make sure that the company had an empowerment component, which is the essentials element, the wellness essentials element. And then, of course, we have a division that are for women who are pretty much in transition, similar to my experience when I went through that transition. I needed support and I needed, a way to survive, basically. And, you know, not having that could make you have a better chance of becoming a victim of something unhealthy, whether it's domestic violence, whether it's drugs, you know, whether it's just low self-esteem, you know, just an unhealthy feeling or an unhealthy life element that could take place. So I decided to dedicate and create a division called Bling, which stands for building layers that empower and nurture your growth. So therefore, in the transition, it's a building tool that connects with helping you get to that next place while you're transitioning and positioning yourself to be in a better place. So we focus on career and entrepreneurship and personal development tools and skills and opportunities for women who are in transition of the various populations, i.e. Welfare, low income, poverty, as well as domestic violence victims and reentry, former foster youth, and just women in general who could use that boost.
Gotcha.
Yes. And we also stand behind social causes. So I do a program called the Be About It Movement. It's a project that connects with community and youth. And on a regular basis, I just keep a social connection with different type of social issues. One being violence, which is the WEAVE Project. It stands for Women Entertainers Against All Violence Everywhere. And then I'm an advocate for the autistic community, which is the parents who have children with autism, the awareness, the intervention, and the support services. So all of our businesses support the causes in one way or the other. We donate a proportion of our proceeds and resources and support towards parents who have children with autism in the autistic awareness movement, mm-hmm. as well as to female empowerment. And lastly, I have the Young Grandmothers Club, which is another organization. and so we're just, you know, connected and highlighting the young grandmother culture, which is a very unique culture that isn't talked about often. And being that I'm one, mm-hmm. I unite, empower, and bring awareness to the young grandparent culture. And not only is it a organization, but it's also a reality show project that that I've created.
Okay. And how did you first get involved in autism-related charities?
Well, I became very close to the movement because my daughter had a daughter who has autism. And so I understand the challenge, the struggle, the emotional support that the parents need, you know, in that space. And also, I celebrate and recognize the strength that they have. And that's how I got connected to it. Just really, you know, it being basically my granddaughter.
Gotcha. And, you know, I heard a song you did, Women We Rise Together, that was inspired by the Oakland mayor.
Operates with logic, turns a bad to a good, a negative to a positive. Like Mayor Kwan and Maya Angelou, bringing jobs to the area, legendary carriers.
What is it about Jean Kwan and her story that grabbed you?
Well, the fact that she was a minority woman and a woman in general that was willing to take the to be strong and take the risk of such a heavy responsibility as a mayor, and in such a area that, you know, could be pretty rough for people.
Sure.
And so, she reminded me of myself, kind of like a girl or a woman that's in a industry that males are mostly celebrated and supported. And she, you know, stood as a strong woman, you know, trying to fight through the test of time and all the adversity and all the things that went along with that.
Yeah. So speaking of adversity, you know, I was listening back to your first solo record. And on Rockin' and Clockin', you had one line that you kind of let slip where you talk about being shot like four times. Was that true?
Yes.
Or is that, wow. Is that any, can you
talk
about that?
Yeah, it was true.
Wow. That's crazy.
Yes. Just, you know, I've been a part of violence. I've been violent on the other side in ignorance at one point in my life. And then, of course, I've been a victim of violence and then ended up being a violence prevention advocate. I can't stand violence. And one of the biggest violence that I can't stand is the black-on-black crime violence. Mm-hmm. And, of course, other forms of violence, I'm very passionate about the element of not, you know, of that as well. But that's where it all started from, is when I got shot.
Wow. And there was also some rough stuff that happened at the very first video shoot of The Click. Your brother talks about it in his book.
The video shoot was a success. Then we noticed the creepy brown van driving up very slowly. One of its doors slid open and two men attempted to shoot into the crowd. One shot was fired into the crowd, but the other gunman's firearm didn't work. I could see him trying to make it shoot, but it looked like his gun got stuck. Then they drove off into the night. That was a very scary moment for us.
What do you remember about that?
Yeah, it was very sad because, you know, it was basically people who were jealous and wanted to come by and just mess up our groove because of what we were doing. And that was the sad part about it. We out there trying to do something positive and trying to represent something, you know, for your city or just, you know, for the people, you know, and then some, you know, jealous group of people that, you know, that may have had the same opportunities but choose to walk a different direction, just, you know, got jealous and came by and shot. And of course, you know, there were you know, others, it went very both directions because sure. You know, fortunately you have to protect yourself, so yeah, so that's how that worked.
Okay. And, you know, I wanted to just talk specifically about your rapping for a minute. Who are some of your bigger influences as a rapper? And once you kind of found your own style, do you feel like, how's your style changed over the years?
Well, my influential rap artist was Salt and Pepper, Queen Latifah. I was a female advocate. Yo-Yo, MC Light, Roxanne Shanté was my favorite. And then, of course, the guys, you know, I started connecting with the guys. So my brother was my first favorite, and he still is. And then Run DMC, LL Cool J, I just loved the styles and the love that they was kicking through their music. And it just really gave you a happy feeling when you heard it, you know. Mm-hmm. It didn't feel a darkness to it, which is different from the music today.
Mm-hmm. And do you feel your own rapping has changed since you got started?
Oh, quite a bit. Quite a bit. Originally, it was just fun and I could do it, you know, and I was hanging with the boys just, you know, trying to figure it out. But now I'm a beast. Yeah.
Nice. And, you know, I wanted to ask about Scandalous, the song with The Click, because you actually, you know, it sort of interpolates Computer Love, the Zap song. But you actually worked with Roger Troutman on it.
Yes, you have truly done your homework. Thank you. Thank you for being so familiar and doing your homework. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Most people don't look deep into the past. They just think you popped up. So the good thing is that, yeah, we worked with Roger. It was definitely an honor and a blessing to work with such a talented and such a wonderful man.
Roger Troutman was the songwriter, producer, and multi-instrumentalist who was the founder of the funk band Zapp. The group's sound, with its heavy use of the talk box to create unusual vocal effects, became a staple of West Coast rap. The group's hits like More Bounce to the Ounce, Dance Floor, and Computer Love have been sampled hundreds of times. Troutman also made guest appearances on some rap songs that were heavily influenced by his band's sound, including the song discussed here, Scandalous by The Click, and Tupac Shakur's California Love. In April 1999, Roger was shot and killed by his brother and bandmate Larry in an apparent murder-suicide.
Matter of fact, that was the first notion that I was able to sing. My brothers was like, no, you don't sing. You're a rapper. And it's like, no, I want to sing on this. I want to sing. I'm like, no, just rap. I'm like, please, I just want to sing Shirley Murdoch's part. You know, times are so scandalous. You know that song?
Yeah.
when he said, you know, when she saw in that part, could it be your face I see on my computer screen? Remember that one? So I wanted to do, you know, the same melody and mimic that part because I really like that part. And so Roger made my brothers let me do it. They was like, nope, y'all get out. She's going to sing. Get out and let her sing. And he said, come on up in here and you come work in this studio. You come sing over here, Sugar. He said, now you better sing that song, Heifer.
Nice. And then it was, I think Wanna Get Freaky was maybe the first song you sang beginning to end, right? Not just a hook, but like the whole tune.
Yep.
And I'm singing to you this time. Baby. You look so good to me. Last night I seen you smiling in your old school. Yeah. I was like, peeping.
Wow. Were you nervous exactly. about that? Were you like, what are people going to think?
No, I didn't even think twice. I wish I would have been more aware because I probably started confusing the people that was marketing me. Like, wait, I thought she rapped. Now she's singing and she can sing a whole song. What is she? You know?
Yeah.
I wasn't nervous. It felt really good. I enjoyed it.
Nice. And, you know, speaking of that, actually, you know, you've been doing some singing in recent years in an act with your father. You talked about it a bit last time, the Sugar and Pop show. How did that get started?
Yeah, so basically I sing and I've been singing and I just made it a conscious effort to, you know, to do more singing, to, you know, full songs and not be afraid that people are going to be like, oh, she needs to be rapping, you know, or, oh, she, you know, just criticizing me or, you know, unboxing me. And so I'm a songwriter and I've always wrote songs for people, you know, as well as for myself and for, you know, for different types of projects. And so I'm like, I'm writing all these songs, I'm referencing them and singing them. I can sing. Most people wish they could sing, you know, in terms of if they rap, then they only have to rap only because they can't sing or they got to put a whole lot of features on their voice. But for me, you know, I actually sing and been singing and it's a gift. And let me go ahead and try to, you know, let me work this gift instead of trying to hide it. And so that's what it was really about, is being able to. So I created a multi-genre project. And in terms of, you know, singing with my father, a part of my project is a blues album, whereas it's a multi-genre release called A Taste of Sugar under the Sugar Rush Movement. And the Sugar Rush Movement is a movement that I recently pre-launched, but will give a hard launch shortly. Where there's a series. It's music, motivation, and media. And the music is a series of my music projects and my music talents of the different genres being released, starting with the rap album, which is called Still Pushing. And then, of course, you know, following that would be a rhythm and blues and gospel. And so with all of that in this multi-genre release, as an element of the Sugar Rush Movement, it's just, you know, being free and having my rush, as well as giving my fans and others that may enjoy, you know, the elements of my singing talents, a sugar rush. And then, of course, you know, again, a part of that is the blues piece. It's called Young Girl Blues, which is a blues album. And my father was influential in me creating that because him and my mother and a very close friend of mine always listened to blues. I grew up on blues. From my mom, then my dad had the jazz, classical jazz. And then later my dad got addicted to the blues. And then, you know, so together listening to both combinations, it kind of gave me the opportunity to, you know, to want to connect with the blues. And of course, the gospel is the roots, you know, growing up singing in church. That's where I learned how to not be afraid to sing, you know, or perform in front of people or talk in front of people. It started off in the church, you know, being forced to sing and to speak. And it opened me up to, you know, to giving me a form of confidence and allowing me to speak and perform in confidence. So that's what the Sugar Rush Movement is all about, is the things that gave me my sugar rush. And the multi-genre series is a part of my sugar rush because it highlights all of me.
Gotcha.
And performing with my daddy is a fun and a blessing, you know, for historical purposes to do our sugar and pop show as a part of the series that's available.
Yeah. And I wanted to ask about the click for a second. I was curious about the group dynamics because, you know, when groups get into fights, there's always an option that they can, you know, break up and not talk to each other again. Not really an option with you guys. It's your brothers and your cousin. How do you handle disagreements? Because, you know, you can't be like, I'm out of here.
Woo, that's a good question. Well, you know, we take our breaks. We take our breaks, you know, and that's it. You know, we take our breaks, but we stay connected in one way or the other. And unfortunately, and fortunately, our brand is connected, as you know. So, you know, constantly remembering when they see me, they see he. When they see he, they see me. So, yeah, so it's interesting. If they had a camera in our lives, they probably would think we were all crazy.
Business-wise for you guys, maybe not so much artistically, but business-wise, when you were starting out, Too Short was a really big influence because he was one of very few people, maybe the only person at that point kind of doing it independently in the Bay. Can you talk about that?
Yes, definitely. Too Short was definitely very instrumental. He was pretty much one of the ones that was independently pushing, and he didn't care what nobody say. He didn't let nothing stop him. And so he was, you know, being that, you know, he was from a different city, but we still, you know, was connected and felt like we were a part of that movement. You know, we watched him make things happen while we were making things happen, and it ended up going both ways where, you know, we all had a part in music and was able to unite and hang out and work. And then, of course, we start working together. And I was one of the little girls that used to see Too Short and say, Too Short, will you produce me? So I knew him first, even before my brothers.
That's too funny. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the biggest songs you've been involved with was Captain Save-A-Ho. You know, that you're singing on and stuff. And rapping on also. Yeah. Should I save her? I wanna be saved. I'm posting up niggas and bitches and even snitches just for my riches. Captain Save a Ho, I ain't got no problem with that old shit. I give a damn as long as he's paying. It ain't my fault because he sprung off my land. I'm taking. How did that come together? Who came up with the concept for that?
Well, my brother D-Shot did. He came up with it because, you know, D-Shot, he came up with the concept, and what he was doing was basically, you know, highlighting a personality, a character of a captain that is always, you know, running behind women and would do anything for them. and worked it into a song.
How did you feel when they asked you to hop on that?
I thought it was funny. I just kind of at that time, whatever they wanted, I was there, so it didn't matter. Like, whatever, what you want me to do? Okay.
Yeah. And Hurricane is maybe the best known hook.
Mm-hmm.
Hurricanes having motherfuckers seeing things. Courage juice, watch when I get loose.
Hurricane, but you can call me Slurricane. Slurricane, strong enough to start an engine, man.
How'd the hook come about? Did you write the words and melody? Did they have the title of the song already? How did that happen?
I think I came up with the hook. Hurricane, but you can call me Slurricane. Yeah, I came up with that.
Nice.
That was fun.
I'll bet. And when you're in the click, you know, it's different than being solo, right? You have one verse or maybe sometimes half a verse to make your point, mm-hmm. as opposed to three verses on your mm-hmm. own songs. Does that change how you rap or how you approach what you're writing?
It actually is a lot easier. It's like, hey, you guys, we can write an album in a week, you know.
Yeah.
All we need is to six verses, you know.
You were on a pretty busy streak there in the early years of your career. You had two solo albums and two click albums, kind of like in the first 93 through maybe 95, 96. I think 96 was the second solo album. And then you kind of slowed down your output a little. Why did that happen?
Well, I ended up with, I think it was more like, was it just two albums or was it three group albums or maybe four? Anyway, during whatever how many it was, I just went through a period where there was some priorities. I started doing other things behind the scenes, adding like, you know, I put together like a promotion and marketing company and an agency where we marketed products and brands and things like that, and kind of got a little bit, you know, my foot wet doing some other things behind the scenes and in other industries, just to be able to, you know, show some flexibility to what I can actually do. And then I ended up going through some transitions, some personal transitions, got into a really terrible relationship that really took a toll on me, and it kind of made me, you know, not as motivated. And so in the midst of that, my heart was captured into an understanding of a different type and just really wanting to. I still would do music and tour. So in between, we did touring still, even though there have been albums. It wasn't a whole bunch of downtime in between there, but it was more so in terms of releasing music projects, kind of step back so I could work on some other things in my life and try to, you know, connect with a different view of being here as a human being. And so with that, you know, there came other things that became a priority. And then I went on ahead and started back releasing them. So I've actually released probably about, I'm thinking about maybe eight albums in between that time frame. They just weren't as big as the ones that most people know me for. But I've actually released about eight albums in between that time. Solo albums, I released a gospel album. Then I released a couple of mix CDs. And then I had a couple of solo albums that had a mixture of song and rap on them. And and a lot of features.
Yeah, definitely. You do have a lot of features. So you've seen the record business kind of from a bunch of different angles, right? You started out independent, and then you were a jive for a while, and now you're sort of running your own company. What are some of the differences in making records, marketing records, stuff like that you've noticed between, you know, your independent days and your time on Jive?
Well, when you're with Jive, when you're, it was, they did most of the work and it was a lot easier. So it was quite a bit easier, which is, and then when you're independent, of course, it's a lot more work. So, I mean, that's pretty much the difference. You show up, you know, when you're with a major label and when you're with Jive, you show up and everything is together. They got everything together for you. Of course, you know, you show up, you get everything together, but then you may have to, something else has to give. And then, of course, with the, you know, when you're independent, you have to put all that stuff together. So, you know, so it's a little more work and, you know, it puts a damper a little bit where you're not able to create as much as you want until you get to a place where, you know, things are put in place for you to, you know, to do that in an effective manner while still being an artist. That's the difference. And, of course, you're working with a lot more money at one point or the other, on one side or the other, just depending on the situation.
And, you know, I wanted to ask about the Bay Area. You're from Vallejo, obviously, and Vallejo and Oakland and San Francisco all together have a pretty incredible legacy in rap. What do you think makes the Bay Area so distinctive in terms of hip hop?
I think we are people who learned business and use our hustle to make business out of it. And we all kind of are in our own way. We are all a lot of entrepreneurship mindset. I think that's the difference.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I saw recently you did some shows with Lady of Rage and Yo-Yo. When you were sort of, when they were first out and you were first out, did you feel any kind of sense of competition with them, with other, with other female rappers at the time?
You know what? Now I do, but no, I'm just kidding. actually, I didn't. I was so happy to see other women and be able to hang with them and work with them because, you know, being with the guys, you know, you kind of get sick of them and they get sick of you too, you know. So it's like to be able to have, you know, a woman that is connected and, you know, can kind of relate to you. Oh, my God, I was so happy to be able to even hang out with them and to work with them and in no way look at them as competition. From time to time, I mean, I'm not going to lie, I'm an artist, so of course you get a little competitive. I'd be lying if I didn't, but more so I look at them as sisters in the business because we share similarities as only females in groups with males. And so unlike a whole lot of others, we were actually, you know, part of that, their group and have to deal a lot of times with the overshadowing of the male. So I look at them like my counterparts and, the respectful way that I was treated was different. Like Rage, when she met me, she contacted me and she said, wow, you know, Sugar T, you're a producer. She called my telephone number, my office number, and wanted to meet me. And she said, you're an actual producer. You're an executive producer of your music and your project. You know, how does that come about? Because she seen that that's what I was coming into the game because my brothers taught me, you know, the music game behind the scenes. And I worked as a instrumental part, you know, of the record label and learned the machine of the record label with them and helped run it, not just as an artist, but, you know, as an actual professional in the game. And so when she met me, that was like when she contacted me, that was how we met. And from that point on, we, you know, ended up staying connected.
That's great. And, you know, one or two final things. Early on in your career, both solo and with the group, you guys had such incredible Bay Area slang on your records, and Smob is maybe one of my favorites.
Flicked out me, Sugar T, from the beat. I'm quick to smob.
Quick to smob.
Always down for the job. You got a strut, that's a gang shot.
Where did that come from? Was that something you guys made up? Was it something people in the Bay were saying?
That was something that we made up. Yeah, my brother is a he's a character. So he always got some kind of nude slang going on. And so, you know, we come up with something every now and then, but he's the slang master.
Nice. Uh-huh. Finally, you know, you talked a little bit about what you have going on. I guess I'm just curious, do you think of yourself now primarily? It seems like most of the shows you're doing are as a singer. And you had this great quote about, you said once, rapping is my kiddie side and singing is my womanhood. I guess, you know, wanted you to talk about like singing and how that connects to feeling more grown up.
Sure. Yeah, most definitely. Well, singing definitely is my mature side, and it allows me the opportunity to express messaging and my talents in a different way, in a more mature way, and also in a more diverse way. You know, some things, rapping, it just doesn't seem as impactful if it's written in a rap. So being able to write or perform a singing song brings a totally different element out of me. So it evens out me, basically. Singing evens me out. You know, that's the bottom line.
Nice. And so I know you have a bunch of new projects in the works. When can we expect to see them?
Absolutely. The first project that you guys are going to see is the multi-genre series of From the Sugar Rush Movement. And it'll be highlighting first my rap album, which is called Still Pushing. And the Still Pushing album, I think it represents what's going on today in the female empowerment movement, you know, where we're pushing no matter what and hopefully inspiring males to also take up that space and push, you know, under all circumstances. It's an empowerment piece, but it, you know, it's then The Sky's the Limit is the other single that's on it. And on that particular album, I'll be highlighting as a cause where, you know, it will be in support and the proceeds will be in support as well of the movement of the parents who have children with autism. So that's the first line. And then following that, you know, you'll also see the blues album coming, the Young Girl Blues, rhythm and blues at the same time, connected to the movement, the multi-genre Sugar Rush Movement in that multi-genre series of music. And, of course, following that gospel, I also am working with Shaniko, which is another project, the Shaniko Project. I'll be working on that project with my brother, 40. So that will be the next one. And I'll keep you in tune and everybody else in tune.
Awesome. That sounds great. And, you know, finally, one last thing. On one of your songs, you called yourself the godmother of rap. And I just wanted you to think about talk about kind of what you feel your influences in hip hop, your legacy in hip hop, looking, you know, not that you're done by any means, but, you know, looking back on what you've accomplished so far.
Absolutely. Well, basically, I am the godmother. I feel that I am. I've always been a mother through my career. So I think I was probably a mother before all the other females were mothers in the rap game. Yeah, so, you know, I feel that, you know, the thing that I kicked is motherly, as well as it's also, you know, something to help people in another way, to inspire them in another way. And being able to continue to mother, I feel like I mother in the midst of my rap career, which is very unique.
Awesome. Well, thank you for taking the time to finish the talk with us.
Of course. I'm really excited. And thank you for having me. And if people want to learn more about me, you know, they can learn more about the Sugar Rush Movement, which, like I said, is music, motivation, and media. So you'll see a lot more of me in the media, media projects of various, you know, Sugar Rush Radio, Sugar Rush TV segment. Sugar Rush radio segment, also the book series that I have, the perfume book series, and have my availability more for keynote speaking and performing, and as well as my music projects. So Sugar Rush, again, will be presented really heavy in the media, so you'll look out for that, and you want to, and you can also go to Facebook and to LinkedIn and Instagram, All Sugar Tea or Sugar Tea Official, and find me.
I was glad to be able to talk to Sugar Tea right after she'd received some long overdue recognition at the VH1 Hip Hop Honors. I've long been a fan of her solo work, to say nothing of her hit songs with The Click and E40. It was good to hear about the ups and the downs of working with family, and to investigate the differences between her early work rapping and her current life as a singer. Plus, in my book, any Roger Troutman story is a good Roger Troutman story. Join us next week when our guest will be Monica Lynch. Monica was the first employee at, and quickly became the president of, Tommy Boy Records. She was responsible for crucial albums by De La Soul, Digital Underground, Afrika Bambaataa, Naughty by Nature, Queen Latifah, The Force MDs, and countless others. Make sure to listen for all that, plus crazy stories of Times Square in the 80s, and maybe some music you haven't heard before. Like I said at the beginning, make sure you never miss an episode by subscribing to The Cypher on your podcast app of choice. If that app is iTunes, it's hugely important to give us a rating or a review. And don't forget to visit patreon.com/thecyphershow if you enjoy the program and help us out with as little as a dollar a month. If you want to talk to me or Josh about the show, visit us on social media. We're at The Cypher Show on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Tumblr. Let us know what you thought of this episode and who you'd like to see in the future. More information about anything related to the podcast, playlists, our complete archives, and more can be found for free at thecyphershow.com. The Cypher is created and written by Sean Sotero.
That's how we learned how to look hard.
The show is produced and engineered by Josh Cross at Crosstown Studios.
He said, now you better sing that song, Heifer.
Our music is by 42 Ghosts.
Because I love Prince.
Our web guru is Aaron Young.
Left out and overlooked.
Special thanks to Patreon supporter Tony Robertson.
He's a character.
We'll see you next time around on The Cypher.
Like Marvin, I need some coffee. Where my coffee at?